welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Continuing stories in this hour. Later on, we'll pick up where we left off on the series Frankenstein, but first, part 7 of 13 of Leatherstocking Tales and their production of The Deerslayer, syndicated in 1932.
About to hear another episode of The Deerslayer, dramatized and directed by Charles Frederick Lindsley. To meet his friend, a Delaware chief named Chingachgook, at the shore of the lake at sunset. He and Judith in the ark leave the castle and proceed to the appointed place. They are conscious that the Indians on shore are watching their movements, and Deerslayer tries to throw them off the track by heading the ark in different directions, and at last swings the barge into shore. Chingachgook is waiting at the appointed moment and jumps from the rock to the boat when Judith screams, "Pull, Deerslayer! Pull for life and death! The lake is full of savages waiting after us!" Deerslayer seizes the grapnel line, and the ark glides into deep water. What now, Judith? Do the Mingos still follow?
No, they've turned back. They're swimming to shore. The last one is just burying himself in the bushes of the bank.
They were afraid of our rifles. It was lucky you were on the lookout, gal, or they'd overhauled us sure. And it would have been a hand-to-hand tussle with the odds against us.
Will they make another attempt to reach us?
Not now. They know we are armed with two good rifles. Judith, this tall, handsome young warrior is Chingachgook, which signifies Big Serpent, so called for his wisdom and cunning. And this is Judith, Chief. It's all a long story, and it'll take some time to tell it to you.
Does he understand English, Deerslayer?
Yes, and speaks it too, though he's not over-talkative.
The sun is down now, Deerslayer, and it's going to be another murky night. I think we should keep our eyes on the shore. They may aim out and surprise us if we're not watchful.
We'll watch, all right. But the air will come up in a moment from the south shore, and we can start back to the castle under natural power. Sarpet, I'll tell you what's happened to me since we last parted, although there's little to say. On my way here to find out about the Iroquois, I fell in with a young trapper named Hurdy Harry. He was on his way to visit old Tom Hutter, who lives with his two daughters in a kind of fort he's built out in this lake. The night I came, the two men went ashore to look for scalps and were captured by the enemy. I got off, though, and have been watching over the gals. We've brought off all the canoes that old Tom had hidden on the shore, and we're safe for the present until the varmints have had time to build a raft with which to storm the castle, as Hutter calls his house. And that's about all, I guess. And now it's our duty to plan a rescue before it's too late.
Deerslayer, the wind has come up now, and if you put up the sail, it'll not be necessary to row back to the castle.
Very good, gal. This rowing isn't much to a Delaware's liking anyway. It's certain it turned out to be a gloomy night. I hope we have no trouble in finding the castle. Tell us about yourself, Chingachgook.
4 days ago, Chingachgook leave Delaware village. 1/2 mile from Susquehanna, find trail. Iroquois trail. Follow here to lake. 1/2 day, watch camp of Mingo.
You've actually been to the camp of the enemy? Can you tell us anything of their captives, my father and his friend, Hurry Harry?
Chingachgook see them. Old man, young warrior. Horing hemlock, tall pine.
You're not so much out, Delaware. Old Hutter is decaying of a certainty. As for Hurry Harry, so far as height and strength go, he might be called the pride of the forest.
Were the men bound or in any way suffering torture?
Not so. Mingo busy. Some watch, some sleep. Some scout, some hunt. Today, pale face treated like brother. Tomorrow, lose scalp.
Oh, I'm glad they're not suffering. By tomorrow, we may be able to do something for them. Are there women with the Mingoes, Chingachgook?
Squaw in camp.
Then I have articles of dress that will suit their eyes. And we found many things today that will please the men.
How is it, Sarpent, that there are squaws among the knaves? How many women are there?
Sarpent see six and Watawa.
That's his sweetheart, Judith. Did you see her, Chief? Did you come close to her?
No, Deerslayer. Three too many. Leave too many. But Chingachgook heard laugh of Watawa. Different from laugh Iroquois women. Watawa laugh like wrens.
Trust a lover's ear for that. I know not why it's so, Judith, but I've seen grim warriors listening to the chattering and laughing of young girls as if it was church music.
Have you never felt how pleasant it is to listen to the laugh of a sweetheart?
Why, Lord bless you, gal, I've never lived enough along my own color to drop into them sort of feelings. To me, there's no music as sweet as the wind in the treetops, the rippling of a stream, or the mouth of a sartin hound when I'm on the track of a buck.
Then I think you have much to learn.
Has young paleface hunter met Mingo in fight since coming too late?
Yes, I have fell in with the enemy, and I suppose it may be said I've fought him, too.
Any scalp?
No, Chief, no. I maintain that's again white gifts.
Did no warrior fall? Deerslayer not slow with rifle.
Yes, I don't boast, but I may say one Mingo fell.
Chief?
That's more than I know or can say. He was artful and treacherous, and he fought well. But he wasn't quick enough.
My brother and friend struck the body?
That was uncalled for, seeing the Mingo died in my arms. But I fought with the gifts of my own color. I did not take his scalp.
Deerslayer paleface has paleface hand and heart. Delaware will look for scalp. Hang on pole. Sing song to our people.
Oh, that's easy telling, Chingachgook. But will not be easy to do. The Mingo's body is in the hands of his friends and is no doubt hid in some hole where Delaware cunning will never be able to get at the scalp.
Listen, Deerslayer. Do you hear anything?
No.
It seemed as if the water was stirring near us.
Sarpent here. Something move in water.
It might be a fish. Fish prey on each other like men and animals on land.
There it is again. I do hear something. Listen.
You're right, gal. It sounds like a paddle. Take your rifle, Chingachgook.
Whoever it is, they're moving with caution.
I see it now. It is a canoe. And there's someone standing in it paddling.
But there may be others concealed in the bottom.
We can't beat them by flight. A flatboat would be no match with a bark canoe. Hand me my rifle, Judith.
Quick, Deerslayer. You can easily bring down the paddler and take them by surprise.
Oh, I could, yes. But give him a chance is my motto. I'll hail him first and ask his errand. Stop! If you come nearer, I'll fire. Spartan death will follow. Stop paddling and answer.
Fire and kill a defenseless girl. And God will never forgive you. Go your way, Deerslayer, and let me go mine. Don't try to stop me, do you hear me? I know what should be done.
We must stop her, Deerslayer. You don't know what she has in her mind.
We can't compete with the canoe, Judith. If she's bound to take her course, we'll have to let her. But what can this mean, gal? Why has your sister taken one of the canoes from the Ark and headed shoreward with it?
You know she's feeble-minded, Deerslayer, but she has her own ideas of what ought to be done. She loves her father more than most children love their parents.
And you think your sister has now been on some mad scheme to serve her father? Why, the gal will give the Mingoes the mastership of a canoe.
Such I fear is true, friend. Poor Hetty has hardly enough cunning to outwit a savage.
We must stop her if we can, or at least retrieve the canoe. Grab this oar, Delaware. You go to the head of the scow, Judith, and keep a lookout. We may overtake her, unless she knows the shortest line to the shore. Pull, Chingachgook.
I see her, Deerslayer. Straight ahead. No, she turned sharply to the light.
Back water, Chief, while I float around. All right. Straight ahead again. We'll make it if the gal don't change her path too often.
Oh, now she turns back to the left again.
Now the gal has more sense than they claim for her. If she doubles once more, we'll lose sight of her.
Stop, Deerslayer. I've lost sight of the canoe. Stop. I don't know which direction to tell you now. Well, the shadows on the water here are awfully black.
Stop rowing, Chief. I guess the feeble-minded one, as they call her, has given us the slip. Come ahead here and lend me your eagle eyes. Maybe we can see more than Judith.
She disappeared over there to the left when she last changed the course.
Do you hear her paddle, Chingachgook?
No hear paddle. All still.
In what direction is the Iroquois camp, Deerslayer?
It's west and a little south, I think. Why?
I have a plan. We'll move down near it and wait. I think it likely that Hetty will make her way there when she thinks she's no longer followed.
She may. Then again, she may land anywhere on the shore and go on foot to the enemy's camp. The gal has more caution than we give her credit for. If she doesn't have reason, she has instinct, which is sometimes even more valuable in the woods.
Well, if she does have instinct, as you say, she may set the canoe adrift after she lands, because she's seen Father do that often.
If she does that, we can find it in the morning with the glass and take it back to the castle. But it will leave your sister in jeopardy.
But the Iroquois will not harm her. She knows it.
When the varmints are on the warpath and after white scalps, they may think differently. Chingachgook, lay your head more into the shore. But keep the mast clear of the trees.
Shore very close, Deerslayer. Tree not far away.
Don't get them embayed, Chief.
Yes, sir. There's the canoe. Head it.
Keep the scull straight, General Delaware. Straight as a bullet flies. If it's empty, we'll pick it up.
Heavy, are you there? Oh, I believe it's empty, Deerslayer. Poor girl's gone ashore and set the canoe adrift, as I thought.
You're right, Judith. It is empty. Slow up, Chingachgook, while I fasten it to the ark.
Eddie, are you within hearing? Oh, for God's sake, answer me.
I'm here on the shore, Judy. It'll be useless to follow me. I'll hide in the woods.
Oh, Eddie, what are you doing? It's near midnight, and the woods are filled with wild savages and wild beasts.
Neither will harm a poor half-witted girl, Judy. God is as much with me here as he would be in the castle. I'm going to help poor Father and hurry Harry.
But you can't do anything for them.
They'll be tortured unless someone cares for them.
We all care for them, Hetty, and tomorrow we'll send a flag of truce. And by that reason, oh, please come back. We have better heads than you, and we'll do all we can for Father.
I know your head is better than mine, Judy, but I must go to Father. You and Deerslayer go back to the castle and leave me in the hands of God.
God is with us all, sister. You can do nothing in the dark. You'll lose your way in the forest.
God will not let that happen to one who goes to help her, Father. I must try to find the savages before it's too late.
Come back for the night only, please. In the morning, we'll put you ashore and let you do as you think right.
You say so, Judy. You say so now, but in the morning, your heart would soften, and you'd see tomahawks and scalping knives in the air. I've got a thing to tell the Indian chief. And you will see, he'll let Father go as soon as he hears it.
Oh, Harry, what can you say to a bloody savage that will change his purpose?
That which will frighten him and make him let Father go. You'll see.
Will you tell me, Harry, what you mean to say? I know the Indians well and can judge how your idea will work with the Redskins.
I can't tell you, Deerslayer, but I will go to the chief, and when he hears me, you will see, too. He will send Harry, Father, and me to the shore opposite to the castle and tell us to go in peace. You'll see. You'll see.
The Deerslayer, on Tuned to Yesterday, Part 7, syndicated in 1932, part of our Hour of Continuing Stories on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for Part 8 of 13 of The Deerslayer.
You are about to hear another episode of The Deerslayer, dramatized and directed by Charles Frederick Lindsley. To meet the Delaware chief, Chingachgook. They rescue the young warrior, although nearly overhauled by Indians hiding in ambush. On the return to the castle, they hear the sound of a canoe paddle. Deerslayer orders the occupant of the canoe to stop and is answered by the voice of Hetty Hutter, whom they had left at the castle, but who now is on her way to the shore to intercede with the Mingos for the release of her father and Hurry Harry. She eludes Deerslayer and reaches the shore. Calling back, she will not return until she has seen the Mingo chief. After a night in the woods, Eddie starts to the camp of the enemy and is met on the way by a young Indian girl who smiles at her and greets her with friendly face.
Where go? Indian, red man, savage, wicked warrior that away. With warrior far off.
Who are you? What's your name?
Me? Watawa. I know Mingo, good Delaware. English friend. Mingo cruel, love scalp for blood. Come here to log where no eyes.
I'm not afraid of Mingos.
Why you come for? Where you come from?
I am Hetty Hutter. I live in the lake with my father and sister. Yesterday, my father and a friend came ashore to get Indian scalps. They were captured, and I have come to take them home.
Why your father come to Mingo camp at night? He know it wartime. He know boy. He know want beard. He know Iroquois carry tomahawk, knife, rifle. Why he come nighttime, seize me by hair, and try to scalp Delaware girl?
You? Did he seize you? Did he try to scalp you?
Why not? Delaware scalp sell for much as Mingo scalp. Governor no tell difference. Wicked thing for paleface to scalp. Deer Slayer always tell me.
Do you know Deer Slayer? I know him too. He is now in the ark with Judy, or he will be. He went last night to meet Big Serpent at the rock. Unless they're hunting for me, they're at the house in the lake.
Big Serpent? Chingachgook? His father, great chief of Mohegans. Chingachgook come here?
Deerslayer was to meet him last night. Tell me, has he come after scalps like my father and Hurry Harry?
Why, he shouldn't, huh? Chingachgook, red warrior. Scalp make his honor.
Then he will be as wicked as any other. God will not pardon in a red man what he will not pardon in a white man.
No true. No true, I tell you. Great Manitou happy when he see young warrior back from warpath with 200 scalp on pole. Chingachgook take many scalp as he can carry.
Then his knife must be terrible. No one can be cruel and hope to be forgiven.
No cruel. Plenty forgiven. I tell you, Sarpent brave. He come home with many scalp.
I thought he did not come for scalp. I thought he came across mountains and valleys to find his sweetheart, to find you and take you home.
Come, sit close to his. You good. You Watawa friend. Long time since I have friend. You Watawa friend. Don't I say true?
I never had a friend. I've a sister, but no friend. I'll be your friend with all my heart. I like your voice and your smile and your way of thinking, except about scalps.
No, think more of him. No, say more of scalp. You pale face. I redskin. We bring up in different fashion. Deer Slayer and Chingachgook, great friend, and no same color. What's your name, pretty pale face?
I'm called Hetty. Though when they spell the name in the Bible, they call it Esther.
No good to spell. Delaware girl not know how to spell. My name, Watawa. That say heist in your tongue. You call him heist. I call him Hetty. What you do in Mingo camp?
I want to talk with the chief. I will tell him it's wrong to keep father and the young man with him.
Young man with father, Hetty brother?
I have no brother his. I had one once, but he's dead and lies buried with mother in the lake.
No got brother. Got young warrior. Love him almost much as father, eh? Very handsome, brave looking, fit to be chief.
It's wicked to love any man as much as I love father. But I must tell you the truth. I do love Hurry.
Why, he no ask you himself.
Ask me? Ask me what? Ask me if I like him as well as I do my own father? Oh, I hope he will never put such a question to me.
Young warrior must tell young girl he want to make wife. Else can never live in his wigwam.
Hurry don't want to marry me. Nobody will ever want to marry me, his.
Why nobody want to marry you?
I'm not full-witted, they say. Father often tells me this. And Judy sometimes when she's sick.
No, you're not half-witted. You love father too much.
I know they are right. But it's different with you. There's no reason why the serpent should not marry you.
Shh. East prisoner. Mingo got big ear. No speak Chingachgook when they buy. Promise East, I know. Dear Slayer and the serpent mean to get you away from the Iroquois. And you wish me not to tell the secret. When Mingo close, old tongue, never talk. Good Hetty must not tell secret of friends.
I promise him not to mention Chinga Cook's name.
Maybe he get off hurry and father as well as his. If let him have his way, think of that, Hetty, and put 20 finger on mouth. No get friends free without stopping to do it. Come, I take you to Mingo camp.
Can these Mingos speak English, Hiss?
Not much. Understand some. Not speak except chief. He speak Yengeese.
Have they heard father and hurry?
No. Both free, but watched all time. No get away.
Tell me, have you heard any plans about an attack on the castle?
Mingo hunt canoe. No find. Build raft, maybe. Then take castle.
Then I must prevent them. I will tell them what the Bible says about one's enemies.
Look through the trees. See father, a white warrior.
Father, father, it's Hetty.
Tis not well, Hetty. These are fierce Iroquois.
Tell me, father, did God let you do the cruel errand on which you came?
I say you should not have come here, Hetty. These brutes will not understand your nature and your intentions.
Neither you nor Hurry seem to have anything that looked like scalps.
That will set your mind at peace, child. I can answer you no. I caught this young creature here with you, but her screech has brought down a troop of wildcats that was too much for us. We had no time to take scalps.
Oh, thank you for that, father. Now I can speak boldly to the Iroquois. I hope Hurry did not harm any of the Indians.
No. They fell on him like an avalanche and had him trussed up before he could touch them.
Father, where is the chief?
Back of you there in the trees with a dozen of his braves. And they have their eyes on you. Fear not.
Don't follow me. Leave me to myself. When I come back, you will be at liberty to return to the castle. You'll see. Come with me, Hist. You may have to interpret for me. What his feet do, chief? Tell them who I am and why I've come, and then I will speak for myself. They're waiting for us and watching what we do. Oh, tell them you found me in the forest and brought me here.
Huh? Why, pale-faced girl, come to Iroquois camp?
You talk. No need, Hiss. That Mingo chief, Rivenook.
I am Hetty Hutter. That is my father against that tree. He owns the big house in the lake.
Why come to woods?
I came to get my father and his friend.
Oh, no good. White man come for red man's scalp.
I know they did. The governor has offered much money for scalps. But father did not hurt you. Let him go.
No, let go. Paleface died tonight.
Oh, no. Do you see this little book, Rivenook? It is a sacred book. These words all come from God.
Why, Great Spirit, no send book to Indian, too?
Why? Oh, Indians don't know how to read. Oh, let me tell you what this book says. I will read it to you. First, you are commanded to love thy neighbor as thyself.
Neighbor for Indian, no mean paleface. Neighbor mean Iroquois for Iroquois, Mohican for Mohican. Paleface for paleface. No need tell chief anything else.
You forget these are the words of the Great Spirit. Whoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also.
Well, what's that mean?
It means that if white men try to hurt you, you should not hurt them in return. Or if white men try to take red man's scalp, Indian must not take white man's scalp. And listen to this. Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you.
This is good book of paleface?
Yes.
White man live by this book?
They all try. The French, the Canadas, and the Yengeese.
Paleface friend, listen. This is paleface law. It tell him be good to them that hurt him. When his brother ask him for a rifle, he told to give powder horn, too. Paleface law.
Not so. There is not a word about rifles in the whole book. and powder and bullets give offense to the Great Spirit.
Why then does Paleface use them? Why he take double from poor Indian who ask for no thing? He come from beyond rising sun with book in hand. Teach red man to read it. Why Paleface forget all it say to him? White man offer gold for scalp of our women and children and call Indian beast if he take scalp of warrior killed in battle. One time, white face say white. Other time, he say black.
But it matters not what the wicked do. The words of the Great Spirit are the words of the Great Spirit. Render good for evil, says this book, and that is the law for red men as well as for white.
No good tell chief such law as that. Tell something he believe.
Tell me, what are you going to do with father and Hurry?
Paleface die tonight. Sunset.
Oh, no. You can't be so cruel.
Paleface die tonight. Sunset.
If you do, Deerslayer will kill you.
Oh, I know all about Deerslayer and friend Delaware chief. They do no good. Tonight, Iroquois go on big raft and burn Muskrat Castle. Paleface sister will become Iroquois squaw.
The Deerslayer, on Tuned to Yesterday, Part 8 of 13, syndicated in 1932. You're listening to an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. We've also been following Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, produced by the George Edwards Players back in 1931, and now Part 7 of 13.
Present George Edwards in Frankenstein. Baron Frankenstein related his experiences to Captain Walton, the master of the Voyager, the vessel which was bound on a journey in polar exploration. While the Voyager was icebound, Captain Walton spent much time with Baron Frankenstein, who was gradually recovering his health.
I thought perhaps you might care to look at my journal. I have noted your story down very carefully.
If you will leave it, I will look through it, Captain. You do not mind if I make some annotations?
Oh, not at all. I will be very grateful.
I am glad that you have noted my story in your journal, because something tells me that I will never return to civilization.
You must not say that. You are recovering splendidly.
I know, but I dare not return until I am certain that the monster is dead. We know that he is somewhere out there in the white wastes, waiting to wreak his foul vengeance on some defenseless human being.
You will pardon my contradicting you, Baron, but we do not know that. I think the monster must have perished in the blizzard.
What part of my story did I reach yesterday?
You were telling of your conversation with the monster. You met him after he had murdered the peasant, and he threatened to kill your wife unless you created a mate for him.
Yes. I sat there in the little peasant cottage, and I was horrified at the monster's words. He gazed at me for some time, and then... Foul monster, you seek to arouse my sympathy. Do you not know that you have turned my wife against me? Had I but heeded her advice, you would never have lived. I came to destroy you the day after your creation, but I was too late. You had escaped, and you had already... taken a life.
I will take no more lives if you will accede to my request. When I left your home, I wandered through the woods, and there I saw the child whom you called William.
As soon as he saw me, he screamed and sought to run away. But I seized him by the arm and spoke softly to him, bidding him not to be afraid. He told me that his uncle was Baron Frankenstein, and that I would be punished if I harmed him. At the mention of your name, I trembled with rage. And in a fit of black rage and despair, I killed the child. Just as I shall kill all of your family unless you create for me a mate.
I cannot bring myself to do such a thing. You are hideous and horrible. Were I to create another like you, I might unleash another horror on the world.
My companion must be as deformed and horrible as myself. One from whom everyone will shrink and who will turn to me for comfort.
But I cannot do it.
You must do it, or I will work against you so that you shall curse the very day that you were born, so that you will curse those whose hands created me.
I do curse them now.
I seek to reason with you. You are my creator. Let me feel gratitude towards you. Let me see that I excite the sympathy of some existing being. Do not, I beg of you, deny me my reward. I have tried to paint for you a picture of misery, the horror, and the suffering which I have undergone. All I ask is a mate as hideous and repulsive as myself. Do I see compassion in your eyes?
And if I consent, what then?
If you consent, neither you nor any other human being shall ever see us again. I will take my mate and go to the vast and frozen wastes of the north.
Your body is deformed, and your mind is deformed. I have learned that I cannot control the mind of any creature which I create. If I create a mate for you, she will also have the desire to kill, to inflict misery on others. Oh, I dare not do it.
If you refuse, I swear that all you know and love shall die as others have died. I will haunt this earth, the enemy of mankind, who are my enemies.
So be it. I must consent to your demand on your solemn oath that you will take your mate into exile so that none will ever see you again. Do you swear to that?
I swear by the sun, and by the blue sky of heaven, and by the fire of the love that burns in my heart, that if you grant my prayer, you will never behold me again. Depart to your home and commence your labors. I shall watch your progress with anxiety. And mark this well. When you are ready, when your labors are complete, I shall appear. And if you fail me, you know the penalty. Farewell, Frankenstein. I trust that soon we shall meet again, and that the meeting shall bring happiness.
But, Baron Frankenstein, surely you did not accede to the monster's request?
Well, after he had left the little cottage, I sat and I thought for a long time. I realized that he was a vile and horrible creature, and that he had demanded that I should create just such another creature. And my heart was heavy. With dragging footsteps, I returned home, where I found my wife and my friend Ernst Claval awaiting me. As soon as I entered, Elizabeth
greeted me. Oh, Victor, I am so glad you have returned. I drove you away with harsh words last night, but I regretted my words. Tell me, what news?
The monster still lives.
Victor, my friend, I have heard of your troubles. Elizabeth has told me. Let me offer you all the aid that I can. Together we shall destroy this vile creature.
Have no fear. The monster will do no more harm. There will be no other deaths.
How can you know that?
Well, I have spoken with him, and there shall be no more deaths. Rest assured of that, Elizabeth.
Oh, I am so glad. But can you trust this monster?
I have been greatly punished for my sins.
Tell me this, Victor. Did you consent to the monster's request? Surely you did not promise to create a mate for him.
Elizabeth, there is so much at stake. So much harm has been done.
Victor, you cannot do it. Already there is one vile, bloodthirsty monster roaming here. Dare you create another?
Oh, give me time to think, please.
Oh, Elizabeth, he is upset. Leave him alone with me now, and I will talk with him.
Oh, I am thoughtless. Poor Victor has been out all night. He needs refreshment. I will see that a meal is prepared for you, Victor.
Oh, I thank you, Elizabeth.
Remain here with Ernst, and we shall talk of the matter later.
Victor, my poor friend, my heart is heavy for you. What can I do to help you?
Oh, help me, Ernst. I must grant the monster's demand. I tried to kill him. My shot wounded him, but he did not die. And before I could fire again, he took the gun from me.
Did you promise to create a mate for him?
I did, but my work shall not be done here. I will travel to some lonely island, and there I will have to study again for many months. And there I will create a mate for the monster, which I created.
You must not do it, Victor.
I must do it.
Oh, having created one such hideous monstrosity is a sin for which you have paid heavily. Do not create another.
If I do not, your life is in danger. Elizabeth's life is in danger. I must do as the monster says.
So be it. I shall accompany you, and I will help you with your work.
Oh, you are kind, my friend.
A friend of mine has a cottage on a little island in the Orkneys. I know that he will lend us this cottage, and you will be able to conduct your work there. But I am against it, Victor. I do not think you should do it.
I must do it. I feel sure that if I grant his request, there will be no further trouble.
But how can you be sure? You cannot control the minds of the creatures which you create.
Oh, we shall tell Elizabeth you are taking me away from my health, that I am going for a sea trip for several months. Then I will be able to return here to find happiness when my work is done.
It seems the only way.
The servants are preparing a meal for you, Victor.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. I have just been talking matters over with Ernst, and he thinks that I should go away with him for a sea trip. My health has been undermined by all this dreadful worry.
And you are going away without me?
No, but you will be safe here. I know that the monster will not harm you. I feel that I must go away without you this time, Elizabeth.
Where are you going?
We have not decided yet. But will you not trust him to my care, Elizabeth?
I will, Ernst. But I want to ask you one question, Victor. Do you intend to grant the monster's demand?
My dear, I am going away from here so that I will not grant the monster's demand. My laboratory and all my instruments are here. I am leaving them. I am striving to forget about the monster. You need have no fear. I know that the monster will do no further harm.
What did you say to him?
Well, I do not like to think of it. But I spoke with him, and he swears that he will not commit another murder.
Is he not to be punished for the murders he has already committed?
Oh, there is nothing we can do at present, my dear. If the burgomaster's men find the monster, they will kill him.
Believe me, Elizabeth, Victor is acting for the best. Be content to leave him in my charge.
I must be content.
You have nothing to fear, Elizabeth. Now wait here until I return. I will recover my health. I will forget the miseries of the past. When I come back here, I swear that you and I shall never be parted again. And nothing shall ever happen to Mara.
Did you eventually go to that island in the Orkneys, Baron Frankenstein?
I went to the island in the Orkneys. I will tell you of my experiences if you come to me again a little later, Captain Walton. I wish to look through your journal now, and I may make several corrections.
Very well, Baron Frankenstein. I will leave you alone now, but I will return later.
Frankenstein, on Tuned to Yesterday, Part 7 of 13, a syndicated broadcast from 1931, the same year that the motion picture was released starring Boris Karloff as the monster and Frederick Carr as Baron Frankenstein. Now time for Part 8 of 13 of this 1931 syndicated series.
Present George Edwards in Frankenstein. During his enforced stay on the good ship Voyager, Baron Frankenstein related his experiences to Captain Walton, who noted them in his journal. And it is owing to that journal that we are able to retell the strange experiences of Baron Victor Frankenstein. Each morning, Captain Walton used to visit Baron Frankenstein's cabin.
Good morning to you, Captain Walton.
Good morning, Baron Frankenstein. Did you look over the notes which I have made in my journal?
I did. They form a very graphic and remarkable story. It is extraordinary to think I am reading my own story, and that story is not yet ended. Somewhere outside, the foul monster of my creation still wanders at large, waiting to wreak his evil vengeance on all who stand in his path.
Did you create a mate for that monster? You may remember you were telling me that you and your friend Ernst Clerval had arranged to journey to a lonely island in the Orkneys, there to attempt to create a female monster.
That is true. And I lied to my wife. I told her that I was going to take a short trip for my health. Eventually, I reached the island in the Orkneys, and there Ernst Clerval and I took up our residence in a large, comfortable cottage. I used one big room at the back to conduct my experiments. I studied night and day. I worked for months. And at last, I molded a form which I hoped would someday have life and would be the mate of the monster which I had created. One night, I sat working over this form while Ernst sat by my side. He watched me at work and then...
Victor, I do not know whether you are doing the right thing. I do not feel that you should create another monster.
I have doubts myself, my friend. As my work nears completion, I am afraid. I think that I will unleash another killer, another frightful monster to bring havoc and misery into the lives of many people. And yet I must go on.
You do not know that the original monster you created still lives. He may have died by now. And if you continue with this work, you may have to destroy it.
Sometimes I feel that the monster which I created will destroy me.
Oh, you should not think of those things. Have you heard from Elizabeth lately?
I received a letter from her yesterday. She begged me to return home and wonders why I am delaying so long. She must never know what I am doing. She will never forgive me.
She will never learn. Come to bed now, Victor. You have worked long enough. You look tired and ill.
I am tired and ill, but I cannot leave my work at present. You go to bed and leave me here.
Truth to tell, I am tired of this cold, windy, unpleasant island. Will we be here much longer?
Not very much longer. If I work through the night, it will merely be a matter of waiting for a thunderstorm. That might come tomorrow, and then my work will be complete. Then this lifeless body will have the divine spark, and I will have sinned again. Oh, think of it, Ernst. I should not do it. I know I should not do it.
Courage, my friend. It is not too late to destroy the body.
Go, leave me. I must think. And I must work on and on, working for the monster which I created.
You will be all right here?
Of course. Why not?
Oh, very well, my friend. I will bid you good night.
A moment. Oh, what was that?
Oh, the casement window flew open. The force of the wind must have blown it open.
Strange. It has never done that before.
I shall close it before I go.
That is better. Good night, Ernst. I will see you in the morning.
Good night, Victor. Do not stay up too long.
Alone with the devil's work that I have made my own. My thoughts drive me to a frenzy. If only I had never attempted to create the monster. If only I did not have to slave now at the orders of my own creation. Who's that?
I said that I would be watching over you, Frankenstein.
The monster!
I have watched you these many days. I traced you to this lonely island, and I am happy knowing that now you are obeying my orders. Knowing that soon I am to have a companion, a mate in my own likeness.
Oh, why do you haunt me? Why have you followed me here?
Are you not my creator? Have I not the right to follow you and watch you at your work? Anger me not, Frankenstein. I am living for the day when that lifeless form that lies before me shall have life. Then there will be one creature on this earth which will not regard me with shuddering, hatred, and loathing.
You look more hideous than ever. And when I think that I created you, I am filled with horror and remorse. I cannot make another in your likeness. Begone, foul fiend!
Have a care, Frankenstein. You remember the threat I made to you? Unless you complete your work, unless you make me a companion, all those whom you love shall die at my hands.
Standing there, framed in the window, you look more loathsome than anything I have ever seen. Those hands which I made have killed defenseless people.
And they shall kill other defenseless people if you do not obey my orders.
Tell me this. Have you slain anyone since last
we spoke?
I slew but one man. He laughed and jeered at me, hurled stones at me, turned the villagers against me. Then I seized his throat and choked the life from his body.
You devil, you promised you would slay no more men.
Have you the right to command me?
Am I not your creator? Did you not swear to me that if I carried out your orders, there would be no further murders?
Sometimes the desire comes upon me to kill. I cannot resist that desire. But proceed with your work, Frankenstein. I like to watch you.
Go from here. I will not proceed with my work while you are here. Go, you loathsome visage. Oh, you fill me with horror and hatred.
Very well, my master. I will go. But I will not be far away, and I hope that soon your work will be complete. I bid you farewell. We shall meet again.
Did the monster trouble you again that night, Baron Frankenstein?
I did not see the monster again that night, but I sat in thought for many hours, realizing that my ghastly work was a great sin. Remembering the face of the monster as I had last seen it, wrinkled with ghastly malice and treachery, I was sitting there when dawn broke. My friend Caval came in and found me. As soon as he saw me, he said,
Victor, have you been here all night?
I have, Ernst.
Is your work complete?
It is not complete. But I received a visit from the monster last night, and I know now that I cannot complete this work. I dare not make another fiend. I have not the right to do it.
What did the monster say? Did he threaten you?
Yes. Do you not understand, Ernst, that if I create this female, there is no knowing that she will accept the monster as her mate? She might turn with disgust from him when she sees him amongst other men. She will also know and realize that he is hideous and deformed, and she may have the same murderous purposes. I dare not do it. I must not do it.
My poor friend, how can I advise you?
Give me that iron bar. I feel that madness is upon me. I swear that I shall never complete this work. Give me that iron bar, Ernst.
Here it is. What will you do with it?
You will see. I will destroy all traces of my work. Look, I smashed this lifeless form to atoms. Never will I resume these labors. As I smash this form, so do I defy the monster. I will find him. I will no longer fear his threats. I will destroy him just as I am destroying this work of mine. Look on me, Ernst.
Victor, you are close to madness.
Yes, close to madness. See now what I have done. The monster shall never have a mate.
Perhaps you are wise.
I know that I am wise, but I know that my first creation still lives, and when he learns of this, he will vow hatred and revenge. The monster. Oh, he approaches the window now. I still have the iron bar. I shall destroy him as I destroyed the form that was to be his mate. Oh, the loathsome creature stands outside the window. Look at him.
Yes, look on me, Frankenstein. Look on your creation, then look on the work you have destroyed.
And I am glad that I destroyed it.
Do you dare to break your promise? I left Switzerland after you. I crept along the shores of the Rhine. I have dwelt many months in the heaths of England and among the deserts of Scotland. I have endured unutterable fatigue, cold, and hunger, and now you dare to destroy my hopes.
Your threats cannot move me. They confirm in me the determination not to create a companion for you. Do you think that I, in cold blood, would set loose upon the earth another monster whose delight is in death and wretchedness? I will kill you.
Careful, Victor.
I do not fear him. I seize the iron bar from his grasp. Stand back, Frankenstein. Do you think you are to be happy while I grovel in the intensity of my wretchedness? I go now, Frankenstein. But we will meet again on the day that you are reunited with your wife. Remember that, Frankenstein. On the day that you are reunited with your wife, you and I will come face to face again.
Ernst, will you not help me to kill the vile beast?
We are helpless. He stands outside the window. He wrenched that iron bar from your grasp and bent it as if it were a stick of willow. He has gone now.
Did you hear his threat? I am afraid.
And you may well be afraid, Frankenstein. You have had your chance, and you let it slip by. Hear me, my creator. I am now your master.
Come away, Victor. Come away. We must leave this island at once.
Did the dreadful monster carry out his threat, Baron Frankenstein?
Ask me no more today, Captain. I recall that I almost swooned after the monster had left me. And I feel now that the monster is not far away. He is close to this ship. I seem to sense his presence.
I shall place armed men on guard outside your cabin. Do not fear, Baron Frankenstein. If my men set eyes on the monster, they will kill him. I go to give those orders now.
Frankenstein, on Tuned to Yesterday, part 8 of 13 of that 1931 syndicated series. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the very same time for these great stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening. Thank you.